stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Storage Talk, SVC Disaster Recovery and TRC for Replication Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to your host, Mr. William Wiegand. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica, and good day, everyone, and welcome to this fourth in a series of five Storage Talk calls that we're having. Today, we're going to focus on the San Biden Controller disaster recovery capabilities and also how we can manage that with TPC for replication. Let's go ahead and get started. You go to the second chart, and I would encourage you to put this presentation in screen show mode because there is a lot of animations, and I'll prompt you when you need to change. So let's go to the next chart, chart two, take a look at our agenda. I want to cover a few basics of just global MIR, metro MIR type function. Covers really all the various vendors' implementations, but just want to make sure everybody's level set there. Take a look at how replication works on the SVC. Look at specifically some global MIR unique things at SVC that are important to understand. We'll take a look at some bandwidth sizing, how you would go about doing that. Then we'll take a look at TPCR and how you can use that to manage replication, and then we'll follow up with a live Q&A at the end. So let's go ahead and get started. Go to the next chart, chart three. SVC is a single platform that we can do advanced functions on. We're today focused on asynchronous remote copy, also called global MIR, and synchronous remote copy, also known as metro MIR. Typically, it's between SVC clusters at remote locations used for disaster recovery and business continuance. Do notice that global MIR is not global necessarily in SVC. We can't really go around the world. It's not really going to be a good and workable solution if you have to go from, say, the United States over to Europe or to Asia. There are distance and restrictions that we'll talk about with SVC global MIR, and typically we talk about a distance up to 8,000 kilometers. Metro MIR is usually up to around 300 kilometers is all customers can usually tolerate for the extra latency added. We'll talk about that as well. So let's go to the next chart, chart four. SVC does support two different ways of implementing remote copy. Intra-cluster, which says we just want to do the primary and the secondary volumes for a metro MIR or global MIR relationship within the same cluster. So in this case, the VDIS would both be in the cluster, say, on the left-hand side of this picture that we have. Now, in this case, it's really only designed for testing, so a customer doesn't have to buy two SVC clusters, two licenses, just to test and to see, check out the interfaces and how it works. You can do that within one SVC cluster. Inter-cluster is designed for the real production use for the disaster recovery where you're going to do global MIR or metro MIR between two clusters at two different sites. So we do support both. Again, key to know the intra is for testing purposes because there are some restrictions and limitations when you do it within one cluster. And in the real world, they're going to use the inter-cluster capability from the site A on the left to the site B on the right. So let's go ahead and take a look then at some basics. Here we have it's key to understand the difference between sync versus async. And in this case here on the left, you can see the metro MIR synchronous. When a write comes in to the SVC cluster for that particular VDISC, it's owned by an I.O. group in the SVC. We write to the cache on both nodes in that I.O. group. Then we have to also write to the both nodes in the I.O. group at the secondary site that owns the VDISC that's being MIR 2. And then we have to write to all of those caches, and then we acknowledge back to the application that the write's complete. So you can see that round-trip latency over the communication link is added to every write I.O. So the longer you go, the more distance, the more latency introduced. And that's why typically for metro MIR, synchronous site mirroring, 300 kilometers is about the maximum most customers go. Generally, a lot of times it's more in the 100 to 200 range. We look on the right side for global MIR asynchronous. Here we write to the primary volume, so we write to the VDISC that's mirrored in both cache of both nodes for the IO group that owns that VDISC. And then we acknowledge back to the application that the write's complete. We don't have to wait for it to go over the wire. Sometime later, we mirror that write data over to the secondary site. We write it to both nodes again, to the cache and both nodes at the remote site. We let the cluster then, each cluster lets each other know that we've got it updated in both places, and they update their bitmap to indicate that that chunk of data has been mirrored and is replicated, is in sync between the two sites. So the extra overhead of the latency and the distance and things is not carried forward to the I/O since it's an asynchronous type application. So let's take a look to the next chart, chart 6. This is an overview of the SVC I/O stack, how an I/O traverses through the SVC cluster from the SCSI target, that being the VDIS that the host sees, down to the SCSI initiator, which is what we drive I/Os from the SVC to the backend storage. And I'm not going to go into all of that, but one I just wanted to focus on is notice that the remote copy function sits above the cache on the SVC. So when these writes come in, the remote copy component of the code handles making sure that that data is replicated between the two locations. For Global Mirror, it ensures that that data gets over to the remote site and it's played back in the correct order so that we have consistent data. We'll talk about that a bit more in some following charts, but just wanted to let you know that it does sit up above the cache, so there is some overhead that is introduced whenever you're doing remote copy type functions. So it's just important to know that you need to size both the cluster and the communication links to handle remote copy type functions. So let's go on to the next chart, chart 7. Some more basics that I just want to make sure everybody understands. Just a little review of dependent writes and data consistency. Dependent writes really come into play typically in the database type environment, a good example being that when you update a database table, you have to first update the log to let the database know that you're going to make a change. Then you go and update the database, some data in a row, let's say, and then when that's complete, you have to mark that log in the log that write is complete. Now, it's important, obviously, that these get played back in the correct order, or else you're going to have some kind of a corrupt database situation. So it's important when you're doing remote copy functions that those writes get played back in the correct order and they're applied in the correct order at the remote site. Because, for example, if the log update was sent to the remote site and the mark log complete was sent to the remote site and the update database got lost and never got over there due to a communications problem or whatever, if those first two were applied at the remote site and you tried to recover, you'd have a corrupt database. So very important. SVC works to keep that consistent and the things properly in the right order when they're sent to the remote site. So we have to preserve the order of those dependent writes. It's a big difference between whether you got a corrupt and usable database. And also the fact that if we keep these things in the correct order, if we would have to restart a database at the DR site, we can actually restart it in minutes versus maybe hours or even days to recover a database that has corruption and things within the database. So in the case of making sure everything gets to the remote site properly, if the log update number, step number one, got there and then the update database got there, but number three, the mark log complete, didn't, then the database just has to roll back that transaction. Granted, we lost that transaction, but in an asynchronous type environment, customers are going to lose some transactions. But at least they have a consistent, recoverable database that they can use fairly quickly in the event of a disaster. So again, to achieve that kind of consistency, we have to maintain that dependent write is relationships are applied at the remote site, and we'll talk about how SVC does that, because it is different than how the DS8000 does it today. So let's go to the next chart, chart 8. Here's just a quick example. We're not going to talk about flash copy, but I did want to just let everybody know that flash copy, we can do flash copy across heterogeneous storage. So again, in this example, we can flash because we do it at the VDisk level. In the back end, we really don't care. But in this case, if you hit the enter key, you'll see that we can do a flash copy. And the source can be on a DS8000. The target can be on a XIV. The main thing I wanted to point out is that flash copy is within an SVC cluster. We can't do flash copy across SVC clusters. So some people have asked about can we do that, and they just wanted to let everybody know, no, flash copy is within a single SVC cluster. Now, if you hit the enter key again, you'll see you should have Metro Global Mirror. You can do the same thing. We can do a cross heterogeneous storage. So again, we don't care what the back end storage is. One of the great selling points of SVC is I can do DS8000 to EMC or XIV or anything I choose. It doesn't really matter what the physical storage is because we're doing everything, all the mirroring at the VDisk level. So if you hit the enter key again, you'll kind of see the animation that we can take and mirror a VDisk from the site on the right to the site on the left, and it can be totally different storage on the back end. It's transparent. So again, that's what we're going to focus on is the Metro Global Mirror ability going between sites. So let's go to the next chart, chart number 9. The communications between your SVC clusters is really unknown to SVC. We really don't care how you get communications established between the two locations. As long as the two SBC clusters can see each other and we can zone the ports so we can set up our partnership and our relationships, that's fine. What most customers use, if they got Cisco environments, they'll use fiber channel over IP with probably inter vSAN routing. That's what IVR is, using their IP blades within their directors or within their smaller switch technologies. McData was bought by Brocade. The McData routers are pretty much non-existent. You can't buy them anymore. Some customers have those. We do support them. The Brocade routers use FCIP. Same type of thing. They have those either for their directors or standalone switches. Don't have to use routers. You can merge fabrics. So again, however a customer wants to establish that communication link is their choice. It could be over dark fiber using DWDM type technologies as well. So customer establishes that. Once that's established, the SBCs can see each other and you're set. So we do have a maximum of 80 millisecond round trip latency. This is why we have global mirror isn't global. We can only go so far. This limit is the same for both metro and global mirror. You would never want to go metro mirror this far because that would be a lot of latency to be added to every write I.O., but it is supported, and that is a support statement. If you need to go beyond 80 millisecond round trip latencies and longer distances, you can submit an RPQ. That may be considered depending on the situation. So let's go to the next chart, chart 10. Just look at a few things, remote copy services, just some more basics. As we've already talked about, the primary VDISC and the secondary VDISC, they can be built on different subsystems. That's one of the beauties of SVC is it virtualizes that and abstracts the back-end storage, so we don't really care what it is as long as SVC supports it. We do currently have a limit of two SVC clusters that can be connected together over the fiber channel network. Everything's done over the fiber channel, and they just use fiber extenders over IP. Again, SVC wouldn't know. It's just sending out fiber packets. There are plans in the future in 2009 to allow for more than two clusters to communicate with each other, and you'll see that rolling out in 2009. We do have one-to-one primary to secondary relationships, so I can't make multiple remote copies of a single source at a primary location. That's currently just one-to-one. The primary and secondary have to be the exact same size. We can suspend and resume, so if we would lose communications, we can restart the relationships and only copy over the changed data. We do that using bitmaps. Failover, fail back lets me declare a disaster, move back or move over to the DR site and then come back and preserve the data, again using the bitmaps if, for say, the data wasn't destroyed at the production site. We have consistency group support, so you can group applications together, in particular maybe a server with a bunch of, with a database. You would put all those VDIS in one consistency group. It makes managing the environment much simpler. You can do all the actions to the consistency group versus each of the individual VDIS, metro or global mirror relationships. SVC metro global mirror, you can use the web interface, the GUI interface that SVC provides. You can use command line interface. You can script this function if you wanted to. Or you can use TPCR, which we're going to talk about later in this presentation. And one of the key things about SVC is that it is the remote copy services are all priced per terabyte individually. So if you have a 20 terabyte base virtualization license for your SVC cluster, but you only want to mirror 2 terabytes, you only buy a 2 terabyte license. So it helps immensely in being able to buy just what you need versus having to buy the full capacity that you would in some of our systems for the entire system, such as the DS8000. So let's go ahead and go to the next chart, chart 11. And we'll just take a walk through kind of the process that goes on here. So how replication works. This is the initial setup. First, you have to establish communications between site A and site B. It can be whatever the customer has and is available, is willing to pay for, although it needs to be big enough, and we'll talk about that in sizing to handle the workload. So first we establish that communications. Once the two SVC clusters can see each other, we zone the ports on all, we typically zone all the SVC ports on site A to all the ports on site B. We don't dedicate ports to replication on the SVC. There's just not enough ports with 4 ports per node to really do that. So we recommend that you just use all of them. We then create, once the two SVC clusters can see each other, we create a partnership between the clusters, and you have to do this on both clusters. So you have to go site A to site B, and site B back to site A. It's just part of the setup. There's a bandwidth setting that determines how fast SVC is going to try to copy data from site A to site B or vice versa. This is only controls initial sync and resync, so we'll talk about that a little bit more. The default is 50 megabytes per second. And we'll talk about that setting because it is dynamically changeable and you probably need to change it. You initially want to set it to half the throughput of the communication link. If you leave it at the default and all you've got is a T3 communication link, you're going to flood that line when you try to do the initial sync and going to have problems. And we have a chart coming up on that. Create consistency groups. Again, we talked about on the SVC cluster, you're going to create a consistency group, max of 256 of those on an SVC environment. And we also, you're going to start creating your VDIS relationships, your primary to your secondary. As an example here, you have a primary VDIS to a secondary. They have to be the exact same size, and we can create up to 1,024 of those relationships in the SVC cluster. That's the current limitation. Looking to expand that again in 2009. If we hit the Enter key and go to chart 12, you can see now we have to initially sync the data. We have to get the data from site A to site B. So we start the relationships, or you start the consistency group. If you've set it up that way. At that point, SVC creates the bitmaps that are going to use at both locations to keep track of changes so that we can keep these things in sync when we lose communications or we have to stop things or we have a disaster, et cetera. So you're going to create the bitmaps. It starts copying the data. The secondary will show that it's inconsistent. It's really not usable until that copy is completed. And that could take hours or days, depending on how much data you have and how fast the pipe is that you can get the data across. We copy grains is what the terminology we use in the SVC. A grain is 256K in size. They're copied from the primary to the secondary, and it's copied based on that bandwidth setting. Again, the default is 50 megabytes, so SVC is going to try to move the data from site A to site B at 50 megabytes a second. And again, you tailor this to the size of the pipe, and it is dynamic. And once a grain is copied from site A to site B, then we update the bitmaps that they're in sync, and then we start doing more of those. And then as writes come in to grains that are already in sync between the two sites, then they behave as they would in normal operations. If it's synchronous, then we do the synchronous type action. If it's asynchronous, we do what we talked earlier about how asynchronous write IOs come in. So now once the copy is fully in sync, the secondary is consistent, synchronized, all writes to the primary are replicated to the secondary, obviously. That bandwidth setting no longer matters. That's strictly for the initial sync and any resyncs. The bandwidth otherwise has nothing to do with how fast we move data from site A to site B during normal operations when both sites are consistent and synchronized. What controls how far behind the site B may come to site A is dependent on if we're overloading the communication link, then things are going to fall behind. If it's synchronous, obviously they're not going to fall behind, but they're going to get awful slow. So you got to size the communication link appropriately. If you want to use the secondary site, and we'll talk about that here in a minute, it's still not usable. It's consistent and recoverable, but it's not usable at the remote site, not even read usable at this point in time. You would have to suspend the relationship and give that VDISC read-write access to be able to use it at site B. So let's go ahead and go to the next chart, chart 13. What happens if we use the connection between the two locations? Well, both clusters determine that something's gone on. We can't see each other, so they suspend the relationship. Changes to the primary continue, so everything just keeps chugging along at the primary site, and we're tracking what grains have been changed or updated at the primary site so that we can do an incremental resync when we get the communication link set up. The secondary is also consistent and usable, but it's not up to date, obviously, with the primary. You have to manually restart the relationships when the connection is restored. Just because the communication comes, it doesn't start doing this automatically. And the reason is that site B, you may want to take a flash copy of that secondary prior to resync, because once we start the relationships again, you're going to be forced to make the secondary inconsistent, which means it's unusable during that time for disaster recovery during the resync. So if during that 2 hours it takes to resync the data from site A to site B and you had a disaster, then the data is no good at the DR site unless you've taken that flash copy first. So it's important to really plan flash copies. You don't have to have it, but it's recommended at the secondary site for these kind of situations. It's also probably going to be wanted at the disaster site to do testing. So, again, you need to plan and sell flash copy generally at the disaster recovery site. Okay, the changed grains indicated by the bitmap are what we copy from the primary to the secondary. So it doesn't matter how many times or how many days that communications link's been down. We don't care if the data's changed 50 times on that particular grain. We're just going to send the last grain to the remote site. We're just copying data, kind of like Global Copy does on the DS-8000. No particular order. That's why the data is inconsistent and unusable at the secondary site until everything's back in sync. So let's go to the next chart, chart 14, how replication works if we have a disk or a site outage. So now we've lost the primary site. The relationships are in a suspended state because site B can't see site A anymore. So now what we do is we just set those secondary VDISKs. They're consistent. They're usable. If it's synchronous, they're going to be up to date. If it's asynchronous, they're going to be behind some number of transactions. Secondary VDISKs, we make them read-write accessible. We map them to the recovery server if they have one there. This could be pre-done. The volumes could just be in a varied off state, if you will, say for an AIX server. You would then vary on those volumes. They would be able to do read-write access, bring the applications back up, cover databases as it had maybe rollbacks and transactions or anything that didn't get sent over across the wire after the disaster. And now you have a consistent, usable copy of the data, albeit a little bit behind if it's a global mirror relationship, but that's pretty normal. And we actually call it as a consistent and recoverable copy. It's a power outage. It'd be much like if you lost power on your primary database, it would have to recover at that location, but the data is usable and consistent. So if we go to the next chart, chart 15, you'll see, okay, now we want to fail back. So now we brought back up the servers and the disk and everything, depending on what happened, assuming the data is okay at the primary site and wasn't actually destroyed, we're going to be able to reverse the relationship of these VDISKs. So we're going to take the secondary VDISK and basically make it the primary VDISK and make the primary at site A the secondary and reverse the directions. Okay, and we either can copy all the data back over if we think the data is suspect of being any good. Obviously, if you brought in a new disk subsystem because it was all destroyed, you're going to have to copy all the data. But if not, we've been keeping track of the changes at the secondary site, at site B, so that we can only copy back the changes that have occurred while we've been at the recovery site. So we stop the applications now. We've got the two sites in sync again in the reverse direction. We stop the applications on the recovery server, suspend the global mirror or metro mirror relationship so that we get all the data out of the buffers and out of the communication line, and they're all over at the primary site, site A. We then move our server applications and our users over to the primary server as we bring up the VDIS on the primary server and start to restart the applications. And now everybody's moved back to site A. And now we can reverse the direction again and start mirroring back from the primary VDIS to the secondary VDIS at site B, just like we were before the disaster. So that's kind of how all this works. So let's go ahead and look at the next chart, chart 16. Now this is a situation I've just had people ask about, so I wanted to cover this quickly. Some folks have a metro or global mirror type setup, and they want to actually do backups at their site B. How would I make sure that the data is over there and I can do flash copies and use that data for backups or testing or whatever I may want to do? And you can do that. You quiesce your application on the primary server just like you do today when you want to do a flash copy to flush the buffers on the application. We then would suspend the metro or global mirror relationships, and this will drive all the in-flight writes to the secondary site. So we ensure they're stopped in a synchronized state, and SVC, the relationships won't suspend until that's all done. We then restart the application on the primary server, so we can continue to do what we want to do there. So just like we would do if we were doing a flash copy at the primary, we'd restart the application. But now we're keeping track of the changes using the local bitmap, so we can do an incremental resync of our metro or global mirror relationships. Now we can flash copy that secondary VDISK, and it gives us a clean, consistent, usable copy of the data for testing or backups. And once we get that flash copy started, we can restart the metro global mirror relationships again. So that's basically the steps to do that type of thing. If you have a customer that wants to use the secondary site for a flash copy to be able to do things like backups and things. So we've had customers ask about how you go about those steps. This is basically it. So if we go to the next chart, chart 17, let's take a look at some global mirror specifics. Global mirror is an extension of metro mirror, so they're very similar. You're going to see same interfaces, same commands, just some extensions to that for global mirror. We use the same extenders. Global mirror maintains a consistent secondary VDIS at all times. This is different than the DS-8000 where they do a global copy and then periodically take a flash copy to get a consistent, usable copy. We don't require flash copy to do that. We have a recoverable, consistent copy of the data always at the DR site and during normal operations. Another key thing to know is Global Mirror and Metro Mirror are just one feature, so you don't have to buy one or the other. When you buy remote copy, you get both, and you can use either or both at the same time. So a customer who already has Metro Mirror is, automatically gets Global Mirror when he upgrades to 411 of SVC code or later, because that's when we added Global Mirror into the code. So let's go to the next chart, 18. This is getting a little bit more into the depths of how SVC works, but the impact threshold, this is just something you'll never see, but it's how the code works internally. We set this to 5 milliseconds. You can't change it. Basically what we're doing is looking at VDIS that are in relationships, global mirror relationships, we sample what is going on from a write latency standpoint at the local site on the primary VDIS, and we sample every 10 seconds. And so what we do is we look to see is the average write response times on those VDIS at the primary site greater than 5 milliseconds or less than 5 milliseconds. If it's greater than 5 milliseconds, we increment a counter. If the next sampling is less than 5 milliseconds, we decrement a counter. And over a rolling period of time, in this case the default is 300 seconds, if that counter reaches 30, then Global Mirror is going to stop that relationship or any consistency groups that relationship is in. And that's because we're assuming that the performance is being impacted by something. Either link is not big enough, the remote site is too busy, and we're not getting Global Mirror and the data over to the secondary site in a timely manner. It is asynchronous, as we said, but it is important that we get that data over there. It can't forever be behind or things are just going to back up in SVCs. Going to stop the relationship. So you need to plan and size your communication links to handle the workload. Now, SVC provides a link tolerance threshold that you can configure. You can set it from 0 up to 1 day. It's all done in increment in seconds. I forget what the number is exactly, but you can see the command there on how to do that. The default is 5 minutes. It says, hey, if we're exceeding that 5 millisecond response time consistently, for over 5 minutes and things are backing up, we're going to stop the relationship so that we don't impact the users at the production site. We'll keep track of the changes so we can resync, but we need to address what's going on. You can disable this by setting it to 0, but if you realize then SVC Global Mirror won't stop and it could slow down to the point that it could even do an assert on the node. So you want to be real careful about setting it to 0. If you do exceed this link tolerance setting, and this is an impact threshold for that 5 minutes or whatever the setting is, eventually it'll generate a 1920 error saying that, hey, we've got a problem, and you'll have to manually restart those. So again, we'll talk about sizing and how important all that is. So let's go to the next chart, chart 19, and look a little bit more at how SVC Global Mirror works. When an IO comes in to the SVC, we commit it to both cache and both nodes in the IO group, as we talked about earlier. But we also have to do some other things. We have to log the IO. We have to give it a sequence number. The sequence number is what we use at the remote site to make sure these things are played back in the same order they were at the production site so that we maintain consistency all the time. Now, we send the secondary IO over almost at the same time we're doing it locally. This kind of depends on how busy things are, but we send it over to the remote site. There's some extra messaging going on, the extra overhead involved in Global Mirror for things like, hey, I have to message between the different IO groups in a cluster because they may have VDIS in the same consistency group owned by different IO groups. So there's just work that has to go on that is extra processing. Now, if we have concurrent IO, that means there's no write dependency. We just send it a shared sequence number. So we just pack them all up in packets, send them over there, and they can be played back in any particular order. And that's fine. We don't care about what order those are in. Now, if you go to the next chart, chart 20, if we have IOs that are dependent, as we talked about dependent writes before, where we have the database, we have to do the log update the database, and then update the log that the write's complete, those would each get their own sequence number. So each of those writes would get their own sequence number so that the remote site, they're played back in that exact same order to ensure that the data is consistent and usable. Okay, if we have a problem in the communication links or a problem with a node failure or anything, we can recover by redriving those writes that were in flight. We can have that log already of what was going on so that if a node in an IO group fails, the other node can take over and continue to keep Global Mirror and everything working as it's planned. So let's go ahead and go to the next chart, chart 21. And a couple more key things. This is for Global Mirror, although they really kind of apply to Metro Mirror as well. Your secondary VDIS at your remote site, they must be able to support the bandwidth. If you've got the world's biggest pipe between the two sites, but maybe you have SATA disk or just a few disks that you want to build your secondary VDIS on, and they can't sustain the write workload that's coming across the wire, then you're going to have problems. So again, it's important to size the remote site just as much as it is the primary site and the communication link to make sure everything can handle the expected workload. You may want to dedicate an MDIS group and the disks associated in that MDIS group for your secondary targets with GlobalMir, because otherwise you may have activity going on at the remote site. A lot of customers use the remote site for production type activities as well. And so you could overload the workloads with just whatever workloads going on at the secondary site, slowing things down. You may want to consider dedicated subsystems. Now, on the high-end controllers, the DS8000s, DMXs, don't normally have to worry about that, but some of the smaller boxes, you know, DS4200s, especially SATA-type things, you're probably going to want to dedicate them to that type of function. SVC IO groups, we can host GlobalMir and non-GlobalMir VDIS in there, and we do some things within the code to give a little more priority to GlobalMir volumes and their response time than we do the others. And then planned maintenance, this is something you have to consider. If you're going to have to take anything down, a nodes or whatever, you may want to consider stopping GlobalMir or MetroMir during those times if you don't have sufficient bandwidth or you don't have sufficient node horsepower to handle the workload, it may make sense to stop those. So those are things you have to consider when you're looking at, for doing some planned maintenance type things. So let's go to the next chart, chart 22, and look at some sizing considerations. Yeah, it's important, and this is probably the most critical thing to look at, especially with GlobalMir, but really it comes into play MetroMir too. You've got to be able to have a big enough pipe to handle the workload. If you're trying to drive, you know, 100 megabytes per second of change data across the wire and you're only going to buy a 50 megabyte per second pipe, you're not going to get Metro or GlobalMir to work. I mean, just don't even bother. Anybody's product is just not going to be able to ever get caught up. So that's not an option. A lot of customers, that's a problem. They don't want to pay. Like, I got a little DS3 line. I want to do remote copy. And they don't realize that that pipe isn't big enough to handle the workload, and they also don't want to spend the money. So make sure you plan that appropriately, or else you're going to have lots of problems, and you're going to be calling me, and I'm going to be involved in a crit sit with you. And those are no fun. So you really need to size GlobalMir in particular because of the way it works to even handle the peak write workload. So if you're going to have peaks that exceed the communication link pipe bandwidth for extended periods of time, and I'm talking, you know, more than several minutes, you know, maybe into an hour or something, maybe we're doing batch processing, or I've had some customers that were doing backups and they were mirroring their backups for whatever reason, you just really can't sustain that with the way SVC GlobalMir works, and it'll stop those relationships, you know, get those 19-20 errors. So again, you need to size things appropriate. ATS group here is more than willing to help you do that, and you just need to make sure that it's sufficient to handle your workload. And you also need to consider the initial sync and resync, because remember, we're moving the data from site A to site B. You know, if the change data rate is already maxing out the pipe, and now you want to copy data from site A to site B for some new volumes that you're bringing into the equation, you got to have room for that data to get across there, too. So it's important to size these things and consider all of these things when you're doing bandwidth sizing. So, again, get ATS. We can help you with that and work with you and your customers. Let's go to the next chart, 23, communication link sizing. You know, if you have no idea, which is usually what we end up with these customers, they have no idea other than I got this much data and we have to sort of guess. Here's kind of a best guess bandwidth sizing formula, but you got to still get some basic data from the customers. They should have this data either from their controllers or they can get it from their servers. You can't just let them say we don't have any idea, because otherwise it's a pure guess. And I'd always guess buy the biggest pipe you can, and they always want to buy the smallest pipe they can. So if we don't have data, we can't do sizings, and everybody's going to be disappointed. So it's important to get that information from the customer, and they're just going to have to help us do that, or just probably you're asking for problems. So here's a little formula on how to do it. I won't go into depth on it, but it's fairly straightforward. The key here is we're basically taking it over a 24-hour period. So you can say, okay, I need a pipe 12 megabytes per second. Well, the reality is it's probably not even all through the day, and probably most of the replication, let's say, is, you know, 8 to 5 or in the evening, then that's going to be a lot higher. You're going to have much higher bandwidth requirements because you're going to be trying to move all of this 250 gigabytes, not over 24 hours evenly, but probably more over some subset of that. So this is a very, very rough rule of thumb. And, again, we really need the info from the customer to understand and size things appropriately. So let's go to the next chart, 24, and just take a look at an example of what can happen, because I see this very often. We have a situation, maybe they're running using T3s, very small communication pipes. It's megabits per second, 90 megabits per second. It's really only 9 megabytes per second of change data. Many customers have much more than that they're trying to replicate. They just think that asynchronous ought to be able to handle that, and you can't ever get caught up if you can't ever get below what the communication pipe can handle. So in this particular case, they were doing fine, but then they start up 10 new relationships, and they want to mirror the data from site A to site B, and, oh, look at that bandwidth. And you remember the rule, we should set it to half of what the bandwidth is, so it really should be at about 3 or 4 megabytes per second probably. And they've got it set for 50. We crank up these two new relationships, and they bury the communication link. That causes everything at the primary site to back up because I can't get the data across from my normal mirrors that were working fine just a little bit ago, and all of a sudden the SVC global mirror will stop, and customer's going to wonder why. Well, this is why. Again, you have to make sure that you configure these things properly. That bandwidth setting is dynamically changeable, so they can set that appropriately, and that comes into play quite often as customers don't understand fully what that is. So let's take a look at the next chart, 25. Here's just a few things, again, key to remember. There are some restrictions in how SVC does things. If you go out and somebody says, I created a primary VDIS and a secondary, and I tried to mirror, and it seemed like, my gosh, it never got over 20, 25 megabytes per second, even though I got this huge pipe between the two locations. That's because we have a per VDIS limit of 25 megabytes per second. It's just built into the way the code works. We also have a kind of a maximum when you consider the workload that an I.O. group is doing. We can roughly move around 250 megabytes per second per I.O. group. So, again, if your customers want to test, they normally are going to have a lot more than one VDIS that they want to mirror. So they need to crank up multiple of them to get the kind of throughput up to 250 megabytes per I.O. group that they may be expecting. The bandwidth between the two sites is configurable. That's that bandwidth setting, so you can change that. And it only affects initial sync and resync. Changing that setting while things are synchronized and running normally isn't going to have any effect on how fast data gets moved between the sites, so that's key to remember. Do be careful when using slower disk systems at the remote site. We talked about that already with Global Mirror. Make sure they can handle the workload, especially SATA drives have caused us some grief from time to time. And also be careful now with the new space-efficient VDIS that we have. Using those at the secondary site, there's an extra overhead with space-efficient VDIS, which, again, can slow down response time. So I would use those very much with caution. If we go to the next chart, chart 26. Here's a couple of things that I just – these are just Bill Wiegand theories, if you will, just after my experience with situations that I would use TPC. It's very important to get TPC for disk out in your customer environment so you can determine CPU utilization of the SVC node. You can see what the change rate is so you can size these things appropriately. And my recommendation is don't even bother trying to do global mirror if your customer has four F2 nodes. I would be really even cautious about using them at the DR site unless you fully understand their workload characteristics. These are older nodes. They really get maxed out pretty easily. I've had a couple customer situations where we looked at them. They were already 90-some percent utilized CPU, and they tried to start global mirror, and it wouldn't even stay up and running. We switched them to the 8G4s, and the CPU utilizations went down into the single and teen percentages. So if you got customers with 4F2s, I'd be encouraging them anyway. Great opportunity to get them off of those nodes up to some new 8G4 nodes. Again, you can do that non-disruptively as well. I wouldn't even bother using SATA for metro or global mirror targets. I'd really try to avoid that if you can, or again, make sure that you're sizing things appropriately and that they have plenty of bandwidth to handle the workload. And don't bother proposing global mirror on SVC even as a solution. If your customer wants to go from the United States probably over to Asia or Middle East or Europe, it's just probably not going to work. That's going to exceed the 80 to 100 milliseconds with all the hops and the communication link overhead that's going to be there. Probably just not going to work. You need to look at probably the global mirror on the DS8000. We're looking to improve that in the future, but that's how it works today. You may want to dedicate a subsystem, as we talked about, and I'd also just wanted to point out, avoid the McData 1620 router. It's an older router. We don't even sell it anymore, but it was a very low end, and we've had lots of issues with that. There's a limit on the number of sessions, which means if you have a four-node cluster each side, you can't even get all the nodes to really see each other's ports fully because there's just not enough what they call sessions. So really look at the, you know, and that's what Brocade's pushing is their new 7500 models to replace those. Anyway, let's go to the next chart, chart 27, and let's now take a look at TPC for replication. Some new things introduced to version 3.4. We finally got the TPCR to really support SVC just as we're doing with the DS8000. So we've added some new session types. So let's go ahead and take a look at those. If we go to chart 28, you'll see here the comparison of the session types available. And you'll see that we're now for the SVC the same as we are for all the other systems, for all the DS8000, 6000, and ESS800. The only place we lack is HyperSwap, which we don't support ZOS, so that's no problem. And Metro Global Mirror with the three-site thing. SVC doesn't support three-site currently. That's a futures, hopefully coming in 2009, maybe 2010. And at that point, we'll pick that up, I'm sure, in TPCR as well. But for right now, everything you can do with the SVC copy services, we can do and manage that through TPCR. So let's see how we do that. Let's go to chart 29. And we're going to have to hit the Enter key a lot through here. But the first one is we're going to take a look at terminology. So if you hit the Enter key again, you'll see we have something called a copy set. In TPC terms, this is the two volumes, if you will, in the SVC, the primary and the secondary. They're going to have the same data, right? They're going to be mirrored. So this is, in this picture we have, it's earlier, two VDIS. So if you hit the Enter key again, the next thing we have is a session. A session is really the consistency groups that we have in SVC. So we're going to group a whole bunch of relationships, what they call copy sets in TPCR. And so we're going to take those multiple copy sets that are all related. These are, let's say, all part of a database, and we're going to put them in one session. Okay, and then we can determine the different things for that session. We'll talk about those in a little bit. We're going to set up which direction we want to go, what their roles are, and things like that. So let's go to the hit the Enter key again. You should now have up the role. This is the function and location of one of those volumes in the copy set. So in our little example down here, we have an H1 and an H2. That's telling us this is a host VDISC. It's at site 1, and we're going to go to connect it, or our relationship, if you will, is with a VDISC at site 2. So it's site 1 to site 2, our primary to secondary that we're setting up for our global mirror or metro mirror copy set. So those are the identifiers. If you hit the Enter key one more time, then we have something called the role pair. And this pair is really just that naming our copy set with the role identifier located on them. Okay, so let's go to the next chart, chart 30. And let's, again, we're going to walk through setting up what Metro Global Mirror sessions are. So if you hit the Enter key, you'll see the first thing we're going to do is we've got a primary VDIS. So we're going to set that up and name it. Give it a role as H1. That's our host VDISC at site 1. You hit the Enter key again. This is our secondary VDISC at site 2. You hit the Enter key again. You'll see that now we're going to set up the relationship and the direction. So we've set up a metro or global mirror relationship from site 1 to site 2. You hit the Enter key again. Now we're going to put that in a copy set. We're just setting this up in TPCR. We really haven't done anything yet. TPCR discovers all the VDIS from both clusters, and now we're setting up all of this stuff. We haven't really done anything configuration of Metro Global Mirror at the SVC level other than we set up the partnership so the two clusters can see each other. Now we're setting up the relationships and the consistency groups, but we're doing it all through TPCR. So now if we hit the Enter key again, you're going to see we've created multiple copy sets because we have multiple relationships that we have. This, let's just say, is a database. And then we're going to put them in a consistency group. And in TPC terms, that's called a session. So we're going to create a session, single direction, from site 1 to site 2. That's one of our options. Now, if you hit the Enter key again, another option you have is SVC failover, failback. That's another type of session. So single direction only lets me copy from site A to site B. I don't have a way, if I fail over to site B, or site 2, I should say, to be able to go back to site 1. So I don't know exactly why customers would use this, but because it looks like to me I would want to set up my sessions as SVC failover, failback. So if you hit the Enter key again, you'll see in the bottom there that I can set up my site 1 to site 2. If I go into a disaster situation, need to go over to my secondary site, I can now set up relationships and fail back from site 2 back to site 1, which is what I would think most customers would want to be able to do. So I could really see SVC failover, failback is the type of session that you would normally use. Now, there's one other type of session you can do, and that's failover, failback with practice. Practice volumes, it gives you the ability to make flash copies of your secondary volumes to do testing of your disaster recovery. Now, you don't have to do with practice. This just helps automate that function. If a customer wants to do it some other way, he can just set up the sessions as fail over, fail back. But if he also wants to be able to practice and make flash copies through TPCR to have it do that and make those volumes available for testing environments, then he can set up that type of a session between these between your H1s and your H2 disks. Now, when you do that, it creates an intermediary that, as you notice here, we have H1, H2, and I2. I2, in this particular case, is actually the secondary V-disk. H2 happens to be the flash copy target that we use when we do a practice and create a practice volume. And that's what we would use then, the H2, to mount to a server to do our testing of our DR. It's also what is used because when we do practice, we also, in a real situation, don't want to change our procedure, so we're actually going to use for recovery, in a disaster recovery situation, we're also going to use the practice volumes for a real disaster situation. So the customer would use the H2 V-disk, if you will, in this particular example, as the volume that they would use for disaster recovery. And then when we do a fail back, we're actually going to go from H2 back to H1. And we'll take a look at that here in more charts. So if you go to chart 32, let's just take a look at, here's a practice volume session. You see the SVC Metro Mirror and the Gold Mirror, they're really doing the same thing as far as the function in TPCR. So we have our primary VDIS as H1 in both situations. Our secondary VDIS are actually these I2 intermediary volume at site 2. And then our Metro Rear relationship, or our Global Mirror relationship, is between H1 and I2. Now, if you hit the Enter key again, the flash copy source VDIS, in this case, is I2, and the flash copy target is H2, and our mapping is I2 to H2. So this is all going to be set up by TPCR when you set up a session like this, and it handles all these things for you. So it's very nice what it can help you do. Nothing of this has been set up on the SVC. We are initially just configuring all of this within TPCR, and then we'll see how we make it actually go occur on the SVC itself when you decide to start these things up. But we're just setting up the relationships, setting up our sessions, how we want it to behave when we actually start using it. And we're doing it all in TPCR. So now if you hit the Enter key again, here we see that we put a little circle around the Site 2 H2 volumes. We've made our flash copy. So now that's what we're going to use for our practice. Or in reality, if it's a disaster, we're going to use those as well for our recovery servers. And if you hit the Enter key one more time, you'll see now that when we go back and we want to do a fail back, we're going to use the H2 volumes to go and copy the data, all the data in this particular case, because we don't have the secondary anymore. In this case, we're going to copy all the data from H2 back to H1. So it behaves a little bit different. It's an item you may not want to do. They may want to do the practice stuff manually and just do the fail over fail back. But anyway, it's one of the options that is available in TPCR. So now you can see we have a relationship from H2 to H1, and then once we move back to our production site, we would have to set this all up again. So let's go on to the next chart, chart 33, and let's just kind of see what the action is. Remember, this was all the initial setup. Nothing's happened on the SVC. None of these relationships or consistency groups have been configured yet. So if you hit the Enter key right now and you start this H1 to H2 copy set that we had, it's going to actually go out and create that Metro Mirror, Global Mirror relationships, okay, between H1 and the V-disk at site 1 and the V-disk at site 2. So it's going to create those for you. It's going to create a consistency group, and we're going to add every copy set into it, okay? And it's also going to set the direction, in this case, H1 to H2. So that's one of the commands that you run, and that's what goes out and kicks under the cover. It logs into the SVC and sets all of this stuff up for you. If you go hit the Enter key again, we can now do a suspend. That's another option that you can do. Once you have them started, it starts copying the data, we can suspend it. And we can suspend that consistency group. That would be no different than stopping it as we would do within the SVC GUI or CLI itself, what we're doing as a TPC product. If you hit the Enter key again, we have Recover. Now, what this does is allows us to use the copy at H2. So it basically issues an SVC stop command with the read-write access capability on that secondary VDIS, the H2, so that we can use it at the other site. But again, we're doing it all through TPCR. Now, if you hit the Enter key again, we go to chart 34 and hit the Enter key again. You'll see now if we've decided to move back, we can actually fail back. we can start H2 to H1. And again, SVC will under the, this will, TPCR will communicate with SVC and automatically reverse the direction, change the relationship, do all the things that you would normally do within the SVC itself, but doing it through this tool is much easier to manage, and it'll do that for the entire session that you also have set up. That's your consistency group. So if you hit the Enter key again, we can do a suspend. So now we've moved everything back from, copied everything from site 2 back to site 1. We can stop that consistency group. That session basically is what it's doing. And now we can move back to the, we can recover at the at site 1 again, so it's going to issue the stop command. It's going to make the H1 volumes now read writable again, and now your customer can move back to the production site and start using site 1 again as his primary location. Again, he's done all the administration, if you will, through TPCR. If you hit the Enter key one more time, you can also then use TPCR to say, okay, now we're back at primary site 1, and now I want to reverse the direction again and restart replication from site 1 to site 2 again, and I'm back where I was before I had the disaster. And we've done all this management through TPCR without ever logging into the SVC. If you hit the Enter key one more time, there's also an option within TPCR to say, hey, I want to delete all the consistency groups and all the relationships if so desired, so I can even get to that point. Since I created them, I also have the ability to delete them within TPCR. So very powerful function, very neat tool to help you manage a complex environment where you're doing lots of remote copy type functions. It also works, as you notice on the one chart, we can use this for some of the flash copy things as well. Let's go to the next chart, chart 35, and just look at one more thing. This is with practice. Now, we've done talked about everything that you would do already and how it goes over and fails back. But let's take a look if you're doing a, created your sessions with fail over, fail back with practice. Let's see what other options you have. So if you hit the Enter key, you can see that we should start H1 to H2 again, just like we did before. But now we have another option called Flash, which is going to go out and establish and create, it actually creates the flash copy mappings from I2 to H2. Now, granted, those have to be there and available in the right sizes, but SVC will, you'll have set all this up and see those through TPCR so that they're available. He'll create the mappings, he'll create the, set the background copy rate, he'll create the consistent flash copy consistency group and put them all in there, and he'll issue the prepare to flush the buffers on the nodes just like a flash copy would do, and then he starts the copy from I2 to H2. Now, you also have the options to suspend the consistency group, and you also have the ability to recover. Now, in this case, since you're doing with practice, the recovery is not going to be to the secondary metro or global mirror VDIS. It's actually going to be using the H2, the flash copy targets. So it stops the consistency group from the H1 to I2. It does an enable access flag. It's set to allow that I2 to be read-writable and change recording keep taking place. But you're going to use the same, you're going to do the same steps as the flash command up above, and it's going to create a consistent copy of I2 to H2, and that's what you're going to use for recovery at the DR site when you declare a disaster. Now, if you hit the Enter key again, go to chart 36, you'll see that now once I want to start moving back to H1, to site 1, because I've recovered my primary data center, I can go and reverse things from site 2 back to site 1. So it's going to, in this particular case, remove the relationships H1 to I2 because that data is no longer usable. Remember, we've been doing changes and updates to the flash copy target. So this is where we lose our fail back to some extent in that I have to copy everything back from site 2 back to site 1. I'm going to, this process also stops or removes all the flash copy mappings because they aren't of any value anymore. It does create a relationship, as I said, from H2 to H1, creates a consistency group, starts the command to copy everything back from site 2 back to site 1. We can suspend them again if we need to stop those, stops the session, stops the consistency group. We can recover. It allows us to write back to the H1. Again, we're going to move back to the primary site, site 1, so we can do that. Makes it read-writable and usable again, and then I can restart the replication in the original direction, H1 back to H2. But in this case, that means I'm going to be using the flash copy targets, if you will, that used to be targets. They're no longer targets because we removed those flash copy mappings. But they're volumes that I'm going to be using. That's how I'm going to change the direction. And now the H2 disks are going to become my secondaries when I reverse. And again, I have to copy everything back from site 1 back to site 2. So again, with practice, it changes maybe some of the things the customer may be expecting to be able to do. He may want to do just the fail over, fail back, so he doesn't lose all of the setup that he has in the event of a real disaster. So it's something you have to consider. And again, you can engage ATS. We can help you with these things and what best way for customers to do it. But again, it's exciting to see the TPCR has some really good functions that we've been able to do on the DS8000, and that's now available on the SVC. So I'd encourage you to take a look at it. Okay, let's go to the next chart, chart 37. This is pretty much our last chart, I believe, but TPC for replication, what's the benefit of it? It really does help you automate some of the administration. Makes it a little easier to set up these relationships and things using a more user-friendly interface, not that SVC's interface isn't user-friendly, but it can get kind of complicated trying to do this. So it gives them an automated way to do that, automated way through a wizard, which makes things a little easier. It also makes operational controlling of the environment, and especially with the practice or anything you may want to do, you do it through TPCR, and you can control it and automate the process of moving everything over to the moving access to everything over to the secondary site, and you can do that through TPCR. So it also lets you monitor and manage the copy sessions. And as I mentioned, using the practice sessions, it also gives the ability to do test your DR strategy, which is something that you always need to do to make sure that you can recover your environment. So let's go to the next chart, chart 38. As you can see at the end of our presentation, we're going to open things up now for question and answer time. So again, thank you for your time. I'm going to turn it back over to Jessica to open up the lines for any of your questions. So, Jessica, thank you.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is star 1 if you have a question. We'll go first to John Miller.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good. Two quick questions. I was a little late joining the call. I assume you're going to did you record this call and it'll be posted here soon?
Yes, it is being recorded today. So if you want to listen to it, it'll be available out there where the presentation was.
Great.
And so available to anybody. Yep.
Yeah, one question. On the dependent rights with SVC Global Mirror, how does actually SVC determine that it is a dependent right or it's just a regular right?
It's funny that you should ask that, John, because somebody asked me that the other day, and I had to sit here and say, you know, I really don't know specifically, and I've asked development, and they said,
okay.
Well, it's the way the rights come in, they, you know, that they know what's the string. I don't know architecturally inside the actual, you know, SCSI I/O function,
yeah.
How that works, so I'd have to get back with you on that, but they just said, hey, trust us, it does. We know which ones are and which ones aren't.
Okay.
To do that. So that's about as much as I know right now myself. Sorry, I'll try to find out.
That's okay, no problem. It sounds like a deep topic. It's probably interrogating something like the SCSI commands is right. But if you find out, let me know. That'd be great. But I guess for all intents and purposes, I didn't realize it could differentiate the two, but that's obviously important here. So that was good information anyway. Okay, ma'am.
All right. No other questions?
We'll go next to Tim Mather.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. I was wondering if you could explain or if you understand the reason why they limit a specific SVC LUN to 25 megabytes in the initial sync or in a resync.
Yeah, the initial setting of 25 megabytes per second for VDIS was an arbitrary number that they picked to say, hey, that would generate – you know, basically a 256 type of a write I/O from there. They were looking at this is, we don't want to do much more than that, otherwise we're going to overload, in our view, that V disk. And so just by copying it from site A to site B, we're going to make it so busy that the other I/O to that V disk would suffer. So it was just really a number they picked. We've had some requests to change that. If you have a request to do that, you can submit a score or RPQ request for that. I mean, they could do an iFix or something to change that if it was absolutely necessary, and there are some considerations in the future code to actually let you configure that. But right now it was designed to say, we don't want to overload that VDIS, so we're going to limit it to 25.
Okay. So that's overloading it on the primary side then? Is that the...
Yeah, what they're afraid of is if I'm reading that VDisk to copy the data over to the secondary side, if I did it, say, as fast as I could, all right, then or 100 megabytes a second, then no other IOs could really be going on to it from the applications type thing.
Okay. And one other question that I had was, in relationship to sites where bandwidth is limited, because obviously an awful lot of customers have that as their goal to keep the network costs down. I understand from what you said that there's kind of a rolling calculation that takes place and that a couple of those variables are able to be tuned. Is
yeah.
your view
mm-hmm.
and your experience that if, say, people have bubbles that might be, you know, 10 minutes to half an hour, that that's workable, or is that an unworkable situation in the SMB?
Well, in my experience, if you exceed the bandwidth, so let's say you have some peak periods of times and your bandwidth is 10 megabytes per second and you're pushing more than 10 megabytes per second, obviously that link tolerance, if it's set for the default of 5 minutes, it'll tolerate that exceeding and the things backing up, if you will, for somewhere in that time frame. If you want and don't mind that it slows down things at production, and that's where it gets a little sticky because customers go, well, it's asynchronous. I don't want it to impact production, but, you know, it's the way things work. It can. If you can live with that longer, then you can change that link tolerance to a longer period of time. Or I have one customer who's turned it off, and they just said, we don't want any 1920s, and when it backs up, things just slow down, and that's fine by us because it usually happens at night, and there's really no users on it, so we don't care. It's batch processing. And it just chugs along, and then things slow back down to the bandwidth during the day, and they don't have any problems. So you can control it. It's just that if the users were during that time, you know, they start seeing double the response time, you know, you're probably going to have end users complaining. Now, we are looking to change the way SVC works in a future release to help try to tolerate these smaller, especially smaller customers who can't afford a big a communication link. We're looking at some offerings to help them replicate it and be, you know, they could be even 24 hours behind by doing some things like, hey, wouldn't it be kind of neat if I could do incremental flash copy and use an incremental flash copy target as a global mirror source so that, hey, I can just periodically copy everything from site A to site B over a small link, and who cares how long it takes because I'm replicating a flash copy target, which nobody's using for anything.
Right.
So that is what we're looking to try to do to help accommodate to these very low end. Plus, we're looking at just even changing how global mirror works so that if things back up, we have some other way to control and keep the data available, maybe writing it off to the disk to a look-aside file, they call it, and we'll catch up later when the communication link is not so busy. But there's a point where you just can't do that. And we've had some customers, literally, who they said, we average 30 megabytes per second all the time, and I've got a DS3. I want it to work. And it's just nobody can do that, right? I mean, you never get caught up if you're always doing 30 megabytes a second and you only got a 10 megabyte per second link. You'll never... There's never a time to get caught up. So at some point they have to realize that, you know, it doesn't come for free, and asynchronous doesn't mean you can run it over anything you want.
Right. So you do view, though, that if you did have periodic bumps and waves, that if you set that time lag larger, then
yes.
you may be able to get over it. What causes the slow down on the primary side when you're doing that?
Well, when you've got keeping track of all this stuff and the sequence numbers and the logs and tracking changes, and then you, I don't have really time to get into something called colliding writes, which we have addressed in 4.3.1, which helps a little bit. But if you start trying to write, as an example, to the same area of data that you already just updated a second ago, and that hasn't gotten to the other site, you get into, well, I can't, you know, I got to keep this stuff in order, and I haven't even played it back at the secondary site yet. So, and now I got another write to that same spot. How, you know, I got to hold it up until the other one's done, and you start getting to a point where things just start backing up at the primary. There's only so much buffer space and things as well, and so to keep the writes in order and get them over, they have to get over there in a timely fashion, or else you just things just it can't keep up, right? I mean, I've got data coming in, I can't get it over there fast enough. I've got writes to the same sectors on the disk, and you haven't even told me you got the other ones done yet. What am I supposed to do? So to ensure integrity, they have to either slow things way down or eventually stop the global mirror relationships to preserve that it's still a consistent data at the remote site, but now that's just the way it behaves. It's just part of the architecture of global mirror on SVC. It's really just an extension of Metro Mirror. So we need to do some more enhancements to make it a little more tolerable, that, and that's what we're looking
for. So
to
it's
doing.
The actual synchronization really a component when you've got multiple writes occurring at the same or similar type locations on the primary site that are, and all the calculations that go with that then.
Yes, it's that kind of thing that causes the back pressure, if you will.
Okay.
So it can be the communication link, or like I said earlier, it could even be at the disk remotes. The disk at the remote site is too busy to handle what's coming in. So.
Right.
Anything that does that can cause grief with Global Mirror in its current implementation. So that's where, again, engage us to help you sizing and looking at if it makes sense for your particular customer's environment.
Okay, because I've done both DS 8000 to 6800 mirroring and SVC mirroring, and SVC mirroring seems more a little bit more voodoo-like, where it's more difficult to ascertain why stuff in the background is happening or not happening.
Well, that's true, because the DS8000 says, hey, I'm just copying the data over from A to B. It's not usable until I can form a consistency group, and eventually he even finally says, if I get too far behind, I'm just going to stop everything and form one, and everybody at the production is going to have to suffer. You know, so, I mean, but he does behave a little bit different. He's a little more tolerable of the peaks because he can just say, okay, I can't form a consistency group. I'll try again later.
Right.
He doesn't work that way currently.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Jessica, we got any other questions?
As a reminder to our phone audience, that is star one if you have a question.
Okay. Also, Jessica, just before we go any further, I just want to say I do have Margaret from our ATS organization. She's our TPCR expert, and she's on our question and answer panel. So if you have any questions on TPCR, feel free to ask those as well. We've got the expert on while we're at it. So, Jessica, any other questions come in at this point in time?
There are no further questions at this time, Mr. Wiegand.
Margaret, did you have anything you wanted to say, or did I misstate anything as I kind of went through the TPCR portion of this presentation?
You did a very good job on the TPCR. Thank you.
You taught me well, so thank you very much. Again, if there's any other questions, hit that star one. If there's no more coming in, Jessica, then... I assume there's none at this point?
That is correct, sir.
Okay, well, then we must have trained you all very well. But if you do have any questions, you know how to find us. We'd be glad to help you out. You can engage ATS at any time using the Tech Express form that's out there on the W3 IBM support site. We'd be glad to help you out with any Global Mirror or TPCR situations or opportunities that you have. Again, join us next week for... an SVC best practices section. It's going to be next Wednesday. That'll be our last in this series. And again, thank you for your participation, and we'll talk to you next week.
That does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation and wish you a wonderful afternoon.